I call this meeting of House Military Veterans Affairs to order. It is 1 p.m. on Tuesday, February 28th. We're in the Gruenberg Room in the State Capitol in Juneau. With me, I have Representative Shaw and I have Representative Rauscher. And I also like to give a special shout out to our guest of honor, Representative Genevieve Mina. She is in the audience. Brief release. Your cell phones. I'd like to recognize Representative Dan Sadler. He's here at 101. Representative Cliff Groh. He's here at 101 as well. I'd like to thank Sydney Truitt with the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting. Linda Jensen with the House Records for documenting today's meeting. We have two items on the agenda today. House Joint Resolution 4, honoring the Alaska-Korean Partnership, and House Bill 76, pay for the Alaska State Defense Force. HJR 4 is sponsored by Representative Genevieve Mina, and Representative Mina and her staffer, Katie Giorgio, are here to present the resolution to the committee. And from the Korean Council, we have Council Sang on the line for invited testimony. Thank you, Council Sang, for attending. Please note that the committee will take public testimony during today's hearing. Welcome, Representative Mina. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about HJR 4.
Thank you, Chair Wright and the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Genevieve Mina. I'm the House District 19 representative, and I am here with my staff, Katie Giorgio, to represent and introduce House Joint Resolution 4, honoring the Alaska-Korea relationship. I'm really pleased to introduce this resolution along with the Consulate of the Republic of Korea, who brought forth this resolution forward to myself. This resolution commemorates many different anniversaries related to the Republic of Korea, also known as South Korea, and with the state of Alaska, as well as the United States. This year, 2023, is a very significant year when we are talking about this relationship between their country and our state, and it commemorates not only the 70th anniversary of the Mutual Defense Treaty between the United States and the Republic of Korea, but also the 70th anniversary of the Korean Armistice Agreement, which came forth upon the ending of the Korean War. The resolution also acknowledges and celebrates the 120th anniversary of the first Korean immigration to the United States. Talking more deeply about some of these different anniversaries, for the 70th anniversary of the Mutual Defense Treaty, as well as the Korean Armistice Agreement, in the Korean War, over 1.8 million American troops fought in that war, including over 2,500 Alaskans. And this resolution really honors much of that service between South Korea and the United States in terms of the military cooperation that we've had. But also in the 120th anniversary of the first Korean immigration to the United States, bringing it back to our state of Alaska, today over 7,000 Korean Americans live in the state, most prominently actually in the city of Bethel, where we have the highest percentage of Koreans living in that city compared to any other community in the state. This resolution is important for three different areas. I want to highlight the military alliance that the Republic of Korea has with the United States, as well as the economic partnership between South Korea and the state of Alaska, and finally celebrating the Korean community that we have here. Talking a bit about the Republic of Korea and the U.S. military alliance, the mutual defense treaty that the Republic of Korea and the United States has is one of the strongest in the world, and the state of Alaska is a pivotal role in this relationship because of our proximity to the Korean Peninsula. Alaska and the United States have been very instrumental in really strengthening South Korea upon the end of the Korean War and making sure that their country is economically prosperous and has the national defense that it needs in order to keep its country safe, our country safe, and the rest of the world safe. Additionally, a couple of different examples of the Republic of Korea and their military being here in Alaska, two that I'd like to point out, and these examples were also mentioned in Consul Sang's letter of support. The Republic of Korea Air Force participates in Exercise Red Flag Alaska, which is a joint aerial combat training exercise held by the U.S. Air Force. Additionally, last year, Korean Navy ships arrived in Anchorage for the first time as part of the Republic of Korea Navy cruise training. So it's a really great relationship that we have between our militaries. Moving over to the economic partnership, fun fact is that South Korea is Alaska's strongest trade partner. We trade minerals and ores. We trade petroleum and oil. We trade fish, seafood, computers, and technology. Moreover, when we're talking about cargo and tourism, Korean Airlines and Asiana Airlines have been major air cargo carriers at the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. And finally, you know, highlighting Korean Americans that live here in Alaska. I mentioned earlier that over 7,000 Korean Americans live here. And they run small businesses. They are community leaders. We have many churches here in Anchorage. And there are annual events to really celebrate specifically the Korea-Alaska relationship. The Korea-Alaska Friendship Festival has been held by the Korean Anchorage Community Association over the past couple of years, which is a great convening to celebrate Korean Americans and their impact on Alaskans today. I also wanted to highlight last year in 2022 when Miss Alaska, Ms. Emma Broyles, was crowned Miss America. And not only was she the first Alaskan to be Miss America, she was also the first Korean American to be Miss America. So we're really proud of those highlights of the Korean community. And one final example that I just wanted to highlight. Last year, my predecessor, Representative Garen Tarr, honored Insuk Beck, who is an individual in Mountain View who has been doing so much community work, volunteering her time at the Shell gas station in Mountain View, doing Thanksgiving dinners for free every year. And so the Bergara Bridge was named after Insuk Beck. And there are so many of these different contributions. And so whether it is our military, our economy, or our community, I'm really honored to bring forth this resolution today. Thank you to the committee for hearing House Joint Resolution 4.
Thank you. And before I open up for questions from the committee, I'd like to say that I have been aboard the Republic of Korea naval ship last year. Being a fellow seaman, we always like to judge each other on how we keep our ships, and they kept a clean ship, so I really appreciate that. Very nice event. So do we have any questions from the committee?
Great question.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mina through the chair. Just to read about the ending of the hostilities in the Korean War, could you just clarify, just to maintain the integrity of the historical record, we currently stand at an armistice, but not at a formal end of the Korean War. Is that correct?
Thank you for the question, Representative Sadler. Through the chair, I would actually like to shift that question over to our invited testimony, Consul Sang, if he could provide further clarification on that.
And if I may, before the answer, just to the chair, the point being is I'm hoping to sharpen the point that it's important to maintain the relationship because it's not entirely over, and it's important to maintain a good relationship in case things should heat up again.
Absolutely.
And just for the record, we have Representative Gray, who is here with us at 103, and Representative Carpenter at 106. So, Mr. Sang, would you like to answer the question?
Honorable Chair and honorable members of the committee, thank you for having me. I just briefly answer to the question first. The Korean War ended with a ceasefire agreement in 1953. So still legally in the war with North Korea, and the peace treaty is required to formally end the war. So still we are in the worst situation in terms of legal terms. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Singh. Any other question?
Mr. Chairman, I just would appreciate hearing from the Mr. Shin just the value of this resolution and what it means to his country.
Yes, Council Singh, will you answer that question?
Yeah, actually, the Representative Mina mentioned almost all things about the Korea United States relations and Korea Alaska relations. As Representative Mina mentioned, this year marks a very important anniversary, 70th anniversary of Korea United States Alliance, and also 70th anniversary of Korean Armistice Agreement, and also 120th anniversary of first Korean immigration to the United States. This is the kind of the year of the milestone to looking back the Korea-United States relations and also the Korea-Alaska relations. So I think this resolution it will be very, very honorable and symbolic to acknowledge our long-standing and very special bilateral relationship. And this is also our kind of resolve to do continue to promote and deepen our friendship and development our relationship in the future. Thank you.
All right, so at this time, I'd like to open it up for invited testimony. Council Singh, would you like to begin your testimony?
Honorable Chair, Representative Stanley Wright, and honorable members of the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, Alaska State House. My name is Seungman Sang. I'm a consul and head of the Consulate of the Republic of Korea in Anchorage. Thank you for having me for the testimony of the resolution, HJR number 4, honoring the Alaska-Korea relationship. I'm very honored and humbled by speaking in front of Honorable Alaska State House. I would like to speak briefly on Korea-US and Korea-Alaska relationship. The Korea-US alliance is the bedrock of today's Korea-US relationship. It was forged in blood right after the Korean War, ended with the ceasefire agreement in 1953. Where Koreans and Americans fought together for freedom and democracy against the communist invasion in 1950. 1.8 million U.S. Troops were engaged in the war, and over 36,000 Americans died during the war. Today, a lot of people call the Korean War a forgotten war, but we can't and we won't forget the war. Our government and people have been commemorating the war every year, appreciating for the veteran sacrifices and dedication. The Korean War is the very starting point of Korea-US alliance, and the Korean War is the unique background against our bilateral alliance. And then the Korea-US alliance has become not only the foundation of the Korea's defense and security, but also the cornerstone of its rapid economic growth and stable democracy. Only a half century after the Korea-US alliance signed, Korea has transformed from an aid recipient to an aid giver for the first time in history. I think this is something showing that the Korea-US alliance is one of the most successful alliances in the world, in history. Korea-US economic relations have been upgraded by the Free Trade Agreement, which entered into force in 2012 and celebrated its 10th anniversary last year. Bilateral trade for the past 10 years expanded about 70%, and the mutual investment more than doubled during the same period, contributing considerably to economies of each countries. Korea and the U.S. have also been developing a steadfast partnership anchored in shared values and interests. As agreed at the Korea-US Summit in May 2022, our two countries are today collaborating to achieve our shared goal of transforming the bilateral alliance into a global comprehensive strategic alliance capable of addressing the most pressing regional and global issues. Korea is now actively participating in the U.S.-led initiatives such as IPF, Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, and Core Minerals Partnership, things like that. Korea-Alaska relationship has also made great progress in lockstep with the development of the Korea-U.S. relations. As Representative Mina already mentioned, so I just emphasize the Korean air cargo carriers are still operating at the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport, contributing to the keeping the airport functioning as a world air cargo hub. And also the Korean Air Force participates in the exercise Red Flag Alaska, and local government and assemblies have sisterhood relationships for more than 30 years. And also University of Alaska and some Korean universities, such as Ina University and Gyeonggi University, have also cooperative relations. Last but not least, the 7,000 Koreans and Korean Americans live in Alaska, enriching Alaska's history and culture. They are serving at various corners of Alaska as military personnel, police officers, firefighters, nurses, doctors, business owners, public servants, etc., contributing to their talents to Alaska's safety, diversity, and prosperity. I also want to mention about two examples, Ms. Emma Boyce and also the Ms. Insuk Baek. So I just stop talking about my testimony. And all these things considered, I have the honor to urge Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee to adopt the resolution. The resolution will be honorable and symbolic to acknowledge our longstanding and special bilateral relationship. Thank you for your listening.
Thank you, Council Singh, for the testimony. So now we're going to open it up for questions. Any questions of the committee? Representative Gray.
Thanks. Through the chair, I have two questions. The first is really just me being surprised that the first Korean immigrants were in 1903. I just found that to be a shockingly recent number. I don't know the history. Is there a reason why we didn't have any Korean immigrants prior to 1903?
Actually, 1903, about 102 Korean farmers were immigrated to Hawaii under some contract base. So this is the kind of former immigration to the United States. Of course, before that time, some unofficial, some immigrant existed, but the former and some kind of official immigration record is the 1903, the 102 Korean farmers immigration to the United States.
Thank you. I have one more question, Chair.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you. My second question is, I was just curious if there are any other states who are honoring this anniversary this year.
I think other states also are considering the kind of resolution. This is the not yet decided, but still consulting with the federal Capitol about our the president's visit to the United States. And at the time of visit, kind of the federal parliamentary some resolution announced about the recognizing the Korea-United States relationship. But not yet decided, and still this is the on the talk between the Korea and United States. So yeah, and other states also are considering the resolution of state legislature or the government, the state government resolution. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Consul Tseng, I guess I want to observe my Korean experience. I had the pleasure of traveling to your country with a former lieutenant governor and was there on your national day when all the sirens went off and kind of the civil defense drills were taken, which brought home to me and to those I was with about the risk that the Republic of Korea exists under, and the benefit and necessity of the international diplomacy and treaties that allows us to exist in peace, which creates the umbrella of security under which our economic relationship can prosper. And I was the portion of the resolution which really intrigued me was the extent to which there's economic cooperation and bilateral trade. So with that said, I would ask you, sir, where do you see the economic relationship between your country and our state going in the future?
Yeah, actually, since 2018, the Korea has been the largest trading partner with Alaska. I think the Alaska has very huge potential in terms of natural resources, oil and gas, and fish and marine products. And I think we have a very broad and very extensive area still we have to go. So as of now, the most of the items of trade between the Korea and Alaska are the marine products and fish and some minerals, but it can be more expanded and we can more develop a kind of some the IT industry or some data, some industry, something like that. But the thing is the I would like to have some kind of platform to discuss about the bilateral some trade and also bilateral some trade and cooperation. So I think that kind of platform need to be installed, and we can more easily and more actively promote some trade relationship between Korea and Alaska in the future. Thank you.
Follow up through the chair, Consul Tseng. I just, if it has not yet been placed on your radar screen, we are considering legislation to allow the importation and sequestration storage of carbon dioxide. So if your power plants or industrial facilities need a place to stash your CO2, I hope you look to the east.
I'm very interested in the carbon, the industry. I understand the governor very actively pursuing the carbon industry in Alaska. That's the very trendy and very in right direction, personally. It's a very interesting industry and very potential is very huge. Yeah, that's my personal opinion. Thank you.
Representative Rouser.
Thank you, through the chair. I appreciate the discussion, and I appreciate the bill coming forward. But I do have a question, and it goes back to Representative Sadler's first question there about no end actual to, and so I Googled. Apologize, I was Googling in the middle of this, and it says the Korean War was a civil war, blah, blah, blah. It says that between 2 or 4 million people died, blah, blah, blah. And then it says in December 2021, North and South Korea and the United States and China agreed to declare a formal end to the war. So is this true? And I was just wondering, can you speak to it? And I'm just trying to understand that statement.
As far as I know, the armistice agreement was signed on July 27, 1953, by North Korea and China and the United States. That's a fact.
Thank you very much.
Seeing no further questions, I'd like to open it up for public testimony. Do we have anyone in the room who would like to testify? Do we have anyone online who would like to testify? All right. So HJR 4 will be held and taken up in our next meeting, March 2nd. Right now we have House Bill 76, and I'd like to thank Representative Mina and her staff, Ms. Giorgio, for coming and testifying. We really appreciate your time. Council Sung, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
Brief readies. Committee. All right, please note that the committee will take public testimony during today's hearing. Welcome, Mr. Christensen and Mr. Anise. Please put yourselves on the record and please tell us about HB 76.
Good afternoon, Chair Wright, committee. For the record, Craig Christensen, Deputy Commissioner of Military and Veterans Affairs. With me is our Ministry of Services Director, Mr. Bob Ernesty, who will place himself on record when he speaks. So we're going to talk about a change to Alaska Statute 2605-260, Section I. And what we're asking is to remove the statement, however, payer allowances are not authorized for training or community service activities of members of the Alaska State Defense Force. So, as a reminder, the organized militia is comprised of the Army National Guard, the Air National Guard, the Naval Militia, and the Alaska State Defense Force. The Alaska State Defense Force is also known as the ASDF. So if I say ASDF, I mean the Alaska State Defense Force. So, In the event of a disaster, the governor can activate members of the organized militia, any four or all four of those components, in the state active service. So state active service is a wholly state type of activation. It is not a federal activation. And when they're activated, they are paid, and they are paid by the state. And the pay is using federal pay scale for military, although we're just using the federal pay scale. The federal government is not paying for state active duty. So that pay scale basically pays the member due to their rank, due to the number of years that they have served, number of dependents. That's the pay. And then there's an allowances part, and the allowances would be basic allowance for subsistence, you know, food, and basic allowance for housing. So a calculation is done for each member when they're brought on state active duty and paid for that time for disaster. In addition, the the section that we're asking to be removed, when it says, however, payer allowances are not authorized for training or community service activities of members of the Alaska State Defense Force, there are times where we would bring members of the Alaska State Defense Force in for training. So, for example, the Rodeo National had donated 3 pretty large water purification systems. One's located in Nome, one's located in Bethel, one's located in Wasilla. These are complex. The training, is about a 3-day training. And they're very important for, a community, especially a small community with limited resources that loses their water supply. So this is just an example of training that we may need to provide to Alaska State Defense Force members. And currently, we do not have the mechanism to pay an Alaska State Defense Force member for training. We can pay them. Anyone in the organized militia gets paid for state active duty when they are performing services under a disaster. But this change here is really only talking about being allowed to pay the Alaska State Defense Force when they're brought on orders for training. I need to say that this doesn't happen very often. We anticipate, for instance, the water purification system training, maybe 3 or 4 times a year, we would pull maybe a dozen people together to perform that training. We could also do some communications training on some high-frequency radio. It's very important during a disaster when communications are down that we can reach out to the hubs and find out the situation. So if you think of ham radio, but it's a little different. But basically, those are the kind of things. Now, we're not talking about paying people for drill. I'm not, this is not pay every time a person on ASDF does training that they're going to, be paid. This is very specific instances that are not common, that'll happen a few times a year that we're asking to be allowed to pay them for that training.
All right, so we're going to open up for questions, but first off, I'm going to ask one myself. Bob, would you say that this is mission critical to have them do this training, and if so, why?
So in the example of water purification, so these 3 systems that were acquired are pretty unique, and if we did not have those systems, were more relying on sending in pallets and pallets and pallets of bottled water if a village is out. As far as communication, when a large storm takes down communication throughout a large swath of the area, if we can't communicate with that we might be the only means of communicating with that village, right? So I think it's very important. And the training's always training's key to all that.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Shaw?
Through the chair, I see, Deputy Commissioner, your white paper has a request for $2.1 million in general fund appropriation, but your fiscal note is zero. Can you...
Through the chair, Representative Shaw. So that white paper was referencing our budget request, which is being heard in the through the budget process. This request here to strike that sentence out of the statute is not 2.1 million. This we're talking. I'll pass it off to our ASD who can talk to you about the possible numbers of what this training requirement would cost.
Thank you.
For the record, Bob Ernesty, Admin Services Director. Through the chair, Representative Shaw, this bill is not asking for any additional funding. We're just asking for the opportunity to pay members when they're in training status or volunteer status. There is a possibility that within the 2.1 budget request, that we would use some of that funding to pay for training, such as for the water purification system. But the bill itself that we're putting forward is not asking for any additional funds.
Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair. So this would basically, when you said it doesn't, it's not like paying for drill. I assume they get paid for drill. That's the first, they don't get paid for drill? Oh.
That's what this would be.
This would be. No. Can you clarify?
Through the chair. Representative Gray. The Alaska State Force members are volunteers, and they, unless they are placed on state active duty for a disaster or specifically for a few small training events, everything is volunteer. Their monthly drill are volunteer. And this bill is not, we're not asking to pay them for drill.
Follow up. So, okay, that's helpful. But basically, this would be an opportunity for them to sort of be activated for this training. And we're taking out language that made it impossible to sort of – because when I go to a training as a traditional National Guard member, I'm on Title 32 orders. So this would be sort of analogous to that.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, yes. They can always do training in a volunteer status. This allows us to pay them for that training.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner Christensen, it might be helpful for members of the committee and the public watching to give kind of a brief overview of the Alaska State Defense Force is, its history, its numbers, and mission before we get into the how we pay them or don't pay them for other activation.
Through the chair, in the audience is Brigadier General Alaska Simon Brown. He's the commander of the Alaska State Defense Force. May I ask him to come up and speak?
Absolutely.
As an introduction, General Alaska Brown has over 40 years of active duty Guard and Alaska State Defense Force experience. He also is a retired State of Alaska trooper.
General Alaska Brown, please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Simon Brown, Alaska State Defense Force Brigade Commander. And through the chair, Mr. Sadler, the Alaska State Defense Force was originally the Alaska Territorial Guard from World War II, and they were responsible at that time to guard the coastline of Alaska, the entire coastline of Alaska. And at that time, they had approximately 6,000 members, the youngest being 12 years old, who guarded the coastline. Over the years, the name have transitioned a couple of times, and now we are currently known as the Alaska State Defense Force. And what we do primarily is respond to emergencies throughout the state of Alaska. Some are state-declared emergencies. The majority of them is not state-declared. They are small individual community of disasters that occur in a few communities. And that's what we respond to throughout the year. A good example of that is Typhoon Murbach that just occurred in September. The Guard responded to those and we assist them. But in that case, nobody could fly to get into the area that was affected, whereas I had forces on the ground that was able to respond during the storm and help people out. And that's what's unique to the Alaska State Defense Force. We're in the areas throughout small communities, and we know the area, we know the concerns, we know the citizens. And we are able to respond almost immediately to an emergency, no matter where it is in Alaska. Right now, I have approximately 23 detachments across Alaska, and hopefully to increase that. But that's what it does. And one other point, a big thing about emergencies that affects people, safety and concern, is not knowing what's happening, not knowing who's going to respond, not knowing what's over the next horizon. Having someone in the village who understands the emergency process, you know, who have connections back to headquarters with the Guard and with the state, we are able to get information to the village and to the citizens in a rapid manner, therefore reducing some of the stress that comes with the emergency.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, General Brown. And so 23 detachments, what's your total enrollment membership, and how are they distributed? Just give us a sense of the numbers.
It's approximately, through the chair, Representative Sadler, It's approximately 200 at this time, and it is distributed in Alaska. My concept is as many communities as I can possibly afford is to have five-man teams in communities around the state of Alaska. That gives me a composition of different expertise, communications, medical, leadership, and domain awareness in each one of those teams, so we can provide immediate information and assistance to the disasters that's occurring, and they will have the expertise to ask for additional resources and inform the guard of the exact details of the emergency.
I got more. Thank you. To dive into the guts of the bill before us here, through the chair, to either gentleman who could answer it, I heard Deputy Commissioner Christensen say that this is to allow for training. I'm looking at the language here on page one of the bill. I don't see any specifications only for training, just have when active state service is authorized by the governor. Is that limited somehow that I'm not seeing to training or to other activities?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. The copy of the bill that I have starts out when active state service is authorized by the governor or by the adjutant general as the governor's designee. Members of the organized militia are entitled to receive for each day of active service under the statute allowances to the same extent, in the same manner, and under the same conditions as provided for state officials and employees under. But then in the statute, it also says, however, payer allowances are not authorized for training or community service activities, and that's for ASDF members. So that is, so currently we can pay the Alaska Naval Militia, the Air National Guard, and the Army National Guard for any state active duty, but this called out training and community service out of the state active duty. So I guess you're not going to see where it specifically says training, but it's calling it out of, it's basically saying this is what you can't use it for. And that's why we're trying to remove that.
And good follow-up. It's not your responsibility to know the history of the legislation, but that's a pretty specific carve-out. And I hear the case you're making that that should not be there. Any information as to why that specific exemption for training or community service was included in this in the first place?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I do not know the reason. I was told it was back in the 80s. So that's to some of us ancient history. I do not know.
Very good.
Yeah. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that the fiscal note that we had briefly talked about a couple questions ago was not a zero fiscal note. It's an indeterminate fiscal note, meaning there is, on the notes in the back, it is undetermined how much it would cost because we don't know how many people would get activated and how many times, that type of thing. And I just wanted to get that put on the record. I do have a question, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Would administrative or ceremonial functions in Anchorage or other places in the state qualify for active service?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, no. If you're talking about parades, those kind of community events, we will not be considering that as paid state active duty for this purpose, no.
A follow-up? So the... that's good. Thank you to understand that. I'm thinking about the overhead personnel, paperwork, all the processing that has to go in with bringing new recruits into an organization, and that likely is going to be consolidated at a headquarters somewhere. And the question is, does that administrative function, separate from a ceremonial, that administrative function also qualify for state active duty service?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I think what you're asking is if we had a number of volunteers marching, I'm just going to use a parade again, marching in a parade for community service, would we be paying someone to support them? And the answer is no.
Follow up. I'm sorry that I said ceremonial because I distracted from the question that I was really getting at. There's a headquarters element, and there is an amount of processing that has to go on with paperwork and making sure people are got all of the know what is going on, right? And my question is that administrative piece that is limited to one or two or three individuals on a regular basis, is that part of what the governor has envisioned or is part of this would be eligible for state active duty?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, that is not our intent to bring people onto state active duty to do routine paperwork. This state active duty request is specifically to allow us to do specific types of training that are, you know, more specialized. We need to bring a number of people in for more of a course kind of a hands-on type thing. It's not to be used for routine paperwork.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sandler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner, the bill, as you rightly point out, eliminates the prohibition of payment for training and language says for community services activities. You described training. Could you please describe what community services would be? And then if you could give me an overview of how much training and community services have been happening heretofore without payment that we might expect to be paying for in the future.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would say community service, you know, I know it's in the statute. We wouldn't pay staff for community service very often. I would say if we had a request from a local community that was a valid request for something like, let's say they needed some traffic management, you know, people for a large event, you know, typically with those though, I would say almost all the time, if a governmental entity had asked for that, we would also ask them to fund it. But I mean, that would be an example. But you know, off the top of my head, an example of community service could be, you know, traffic management at a large event, an air show. Or, I don't know, you know, something that has large amounts of traffic, and you need people just making sure that people go the right way. That, you know, but it's probably a bad example because you know I think we would not really be paying STAD for community service, although you know it's part of the bill.
Representative Grohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I see the structure that you've laid out here of the Alaska State Defense Force, and I note that you list three battalions and then a brigade headquarters and headquarters company in South Central Alaska. Is that located in Anchorage?
Representative Grove, through the chair, the battalion headquarters and headquarters company is located in Wasilla.
Okay.
And the brigade headquarters for the scout brigade is in Bethel, and the sustainment brigade is in Kodiak headquarters.
Okay. Follow up.
Thank
you. And are there actual personnel in Anchorage that are either who live there or stationed there? Is there any detachment in Anchorage, my hometown?
Yes. Representative Grove, through the chair, I have a medical detachment in Anchorage, and some of the soldiers who belong to the brigade headquarters and the headquarters company live in Anchorage also.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, when you said that they don't get paid for drill, I guess I have a couple of questions. First of all, do they drill every month?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, we drill 2 days every month.
And my follow-up to that is there another statute that states that they won't be paid for drill, or was not being paid drill an application of this not being paid for training that we're deleting?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, if I understand your question, we are considering drill training. So when it says training, I'm including drill in that.
So follow up. So this would authorize pay for drill.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, it would. However, there would be a significant fiscal note and a budget ask, which we are not, we would not be able to pay for drill, but it could authorize it, drill pay.
Follow up. Would you prefer to leave that option open, or do you want to make it specific? Like, should we amend it so that drill's not included? I mean, I guess I'm just curious if your intention is to just pay for special training and not pay for drill, or do you have no opinion?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, the department feels that leaving the options open and not limiting what type of training, because let's say someone comes to drill, but part of drill, this small group of people are doing some specialized training out, you know, where they have to travel to or be lodged at, and that's part of their monthly drill, but it's also this, like, you know, they're doing what if your purification training during drill? And if we cut the drill out, then we get in this gray area of, you know, is it drill? Is it training? So, I mean, you know, our intent is not, we don't have a fiscal note to pay for drill. We're not paying for drill. And we just would rather say that allow pay for training.
Thank you.
Representative Sandler.
Thank you. Through the chair. I confess to a little bit of confusion as to some of the terminology. The bill specifically cites when ordered into active service, and then I hear the term drill, which is kind of a carryover from the National Guard. So I guess I need to clarify a couple terms. Drill is a two-day-a-month regular practice, you know, staying in shape, staying, et cetera, et cetera. Is that considered active service?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, not really. We call it state active duty, and the statute is called state active service. That is a specific category where a person has been put on orders and for a specific event. It is separate from drill. Drill could, as far as the ASDF goes, drill is not state active service. You know, state active service is, we typically think of state active service as when a disaster happens and you call up, you know, people and put them on state active service. Drill is training. Typically, the National Guard is, when they do drill, they're paid by the federal government, they're not paid by the state. We're not planning on paying the ASDF by, I think drill is probably not a discussion here.
Yeah, through the chair, follow up. So I heard the question. I do want to clarify for the record. So this bill does not seek to provide payment to ASDF members for their regular two-day-a-month drill. Is that correct?
The chair, Representative Sadler, that is correct.
Good. Thank
you. Okay. Any further questions?
Actually, yes, I do have a couple. I always have questions. To the chair, Deputy Commissioner, just want to make sure I did a little digging into the statutes and trying to make sure I understand all the terminology and so forth. So right now, ASDF members do not qualify for retirement under AS-2506-250J. And I just want to confirm that the administration is not planning to come to us to seek an additional change in the pay or benefits status for ASDF members.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that is correct. ASDF members are not state employees. They are eligible for workers' comp according to statute, not eligible for retirement or health benefits or the other typical state benefits. And that is not, there's no intent in this change.
That may be another discussion we have sometime, whether it's deserved, but that's not your intention. I appreciate knowing this. And
follow up.
And we have heard, and I did read that white paper that envisions some expenses. This is not going to be federal money. This would be state money that would pay for the cost of the active training.
So through the chair, Representative Sadler, state active duty is typically GF for training. Now, people could be put on, so just to muddy the waters, if there's a disaster and you know, FEMA comes in and there's other money paying for the disaster, sometimes state active duty can be billed to the feds in other cases.
Okay. Follow up.
I
didn't mean to try and muddy the water through the chair. So the source for this funding is for training is likely to be state GF, which could be either oil taxes or POMV draw or whatever other GF we have. So that again, this is for typical state training, not for, you know, the muddy the water, federal activation, and so forth. Good deal. Thanks.
All right. Well, there being no more questions, I will open it up for public testimony. Do we have anyone in the room who would like to testify? Anyone online? All right, I will close public testimony at this time. HB 76 will be held and taken up at our next meeting on March 2nd. That concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting of the Special Committee on Military Veterans Affairs will be at 1 p.m. on Thursday, March 2nd. If there is no other business, the House Special Committee on Military Veterans Affairs Committee is adjourned at 1:57 p.m.